I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. Weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up a safe space to you independent thinkers out there. Next hour, we've got Stephen Utroska from Americans for Prosperity coming in to do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour. Really have a kind of a lot to talk about that. They've been very involved in the infrastructure bill at the national level while our state legislature is not in session. And holy cow, the more we hear about that infrastructure bill, the worse it gets and the more expensive it gets. So I'm sure we'll have lots to talk about with that. There's also just some other things that are obviously Joe Biden. I don't know if you've seen these fines that are proposed by the Biden administration to companies that do not do the mandatory vaccinations for their employees. It is unbelievable, the fines that they are trying to impose. So lots to talk about with Stephen next hour. I'll start off today with my quotes of the day. I seem to be finding a lot of relevant George Orwell quotes these days. I don't think that's an accident. For the guy that warned us of exactly what we're seeing right now with works like 1984, George Orwell said, quote, "It is not so much staying alive, it's staying human that's important. What counts is that we don't betray each other." Boy, there's a whole lot of people I'd like to make sure understand that quote. What counts is that we don't betray each other. As we see citizen turned against citizen, even to a greater degree now than it was just with regular partisanship when it comes to particularly vaccines and COVID protocols. This is George Bernard Shaw said, quote, "Progress is impossible without change, and those who cannot change their minds cannot change anything." I certainly believe that to be the case. I've changed my mind many times. Apparently that's a rare trait. Most people kind of lock it in by what, about age 24? And you take that with you to the grave. And then this, the great Thomas Massie, congressman from Kentucky, he seems to be making a lot of appearances too here in quotes of the day. The guy understands freedom and liberty. He is a libertarian Republican out of Kentucky, along with Rand Paul. Thomas Massie says, quote, "We're 18 months, two presidents, $5 trillion, three jabs, and a shredded constitution into slowing the spread." He's dead on. And that is exactly what has happened. I saw a story. You know, there's some COVID protocols I can kind of get on board with if they're voluntary. I'm for everything voluntary. You know, what libertarians constantly try to remind people of is any regulation, any law, even if it feels benign, it feels like something you can just, you know, it's just a small fine for an infraction. This is a seatbelt law. Oh, you just get a small fine. Ultimately, though, every single government regulation or any law that's put on the books is a threat of violence against you. Because the escalation of any of these things, even if it's a small fine, should you choose not to pay it, a warrant will be issued for your arrest. Should you choose to not be arrested, you could be killed or you will be put into a cage. So I'm not for forced things because I know anything that is put into law or regulation or statute or any of these kinds of things to police people's behavior ultimately is backed up with the threat of violence or imprisonment. But there's some voluntary things that I can get along with. This, of course, is an overreach of a university, and I'm sure they'll make this mandatory, which I don't like, but I'll explain why I could get on board with it. First-year students at the University of Bath, this is in England, have been given armbands by authorities to signal whether they've been double vaccinated, with unvaxxed students having to wear a different color. And it reminds me of that, too. It doesn't say in the story it's a yellow star, but it's getting close, isn't it? Quote, freshers have been given wristbands to signal whether they are vaccinated against coronavirus amid anger at emerging at this two-tier university campus. Quote, students arriving this week at University of Bath have been given a different colored wristband on club nights if they can prove in advance they are double jabbed or have COVID-19 immunity. Those who cannot prove they've been vaccinated are forced to enter at different queues in a clear example of segregation. A queue over there is a line. So they'll line up the dirty unvaxxed, put them into, you know, bring them in the back door. How long before we hear unvaccinated really should have their own water fountains? The unvaccinated really have got to sit at the back of the bus. Well, yeah, these things are coming. I'm surprised that the black community, well, I guess the black community can see it. Even Black Lives Matter is protesting vaccine mandates. But, you know, I started thinking about this and I thought, well, you know, I think I would voluntarily go along with this because you can just imagine walking up to a long line at the grocery store. I would assume that wristbands would either be red and blue or maybe red and green. You know, green if you're good. If you're a good citizen, you get the green. You get the shocking red if you're a bad citizen. But you can imagine walking up to any crowded space or crowded line with a bunch of hysterical vaccinated people and walk up with your red bag. The crowds would part like the Red Sea. You get into a bus, get onto the subway, and there's no seats. You walk in with your unvaxxed thing. You just watch them. You know, we've seen movies like this where everybody jumps out of their seat and they all huddle down at one end just staring at you. Boom. Seats for you. You want to go into a movie theater? Got a group of people you want to sit together, but there's just no seats in there. You walk in with a couple of neon headbands that show you're unvaccinated and just watch them scatter. They'll give you at least, I guess, with 6 feet of social distancing, they should give you about a 12-foot diameter circle. You know, 6 feet on both sides of you. Like I say, the crowds should actually part. And I started thinking about, you know, looking at these things and thinking about the way they're starting to treat people. For some reason, the idea of leper colonies came into my mind the other day, and I was wondering if there were any cool, fun leper colonies back in the day. You know, can we start up some pure blood camps where those of us that they see as diseased, I kind of like that idea of pure blood. Because I'm telling you that the freedom fighters, the freedom fighters out there, they're a fun group of people. I would go to camp with these people. Of course, our new camps may already actually exist. I'm starting to contemplate these things. I'm kind of wondering, do you get to pick out your roommate or your bunkmates at the FEMA camp? I mean, this feels like an inevitability at this point that eventually this is what it will come to. Forced quarantine FEMA camps, they've been long rumored for 20 years now to have been rolled out, particularly after the war on terror was declared. Are there arts and crafts at a FEMA camp? Bingo? Is there a great karaoke night at the FEMA camps? Because I got to be honest with you, because the more I get involved with kind of this freedom movement here at the station and out in public and hobnobbing with people that are against all of these mandates, I'm realizing they're really a fun group of people. I'm starting to get excited about my FEMA camps. But I have a whole lot of questions because I need to know what to pack. Are there going to be dances at the FEMA camps? Theme parties? I mean, I loved camps when I was a kid. An adult FEMA camp at this point is starting to sound pretty good. And now that I'm seeing the kinds of people that would be there with me. So if you have any suggestions for the FEMA camp or you have any advance notice on exactly what I should be packing, what kind of activities I can expect, please let me know. I've never done that blow-up sumo wrestling stuff. I think that looks like that's fun. Or have you seen you get into the big inflatable ball and people just run at each other? I think you play soccer in these things. I was a big soccer player. If we can get the big blow-up balls and play inflatable soccer at the FEMA camp, I got to tell you, I'm on board. I'll be right back. I got to tell you, I'm getting excited about the FEMA camps. When I was in college, I was the social chairman of my fraternity. I'm going to go ahead and formally right now announce my candidacy for social chairman of whatever FEMA camp I'm assigned to. Because I know if it's a bunch of freedom lovers that they end up locking up, these people are going to like to cut loose. We're going to have some fun. There's no doubt about that. I ran as for social chairman of my fraternity. I was promising during my campaign there, probably my biggest foray into politics, I promised that the Hoodoo Gurus, I was going to get them for our big South Seas party. And I think I pretty much campaigned on that. I was known as somebody who liked to go out and have a good time, so that was kind of really my resume at the time. But I was promising the Hoodoo Gurus. I may be showing my age. If you don't know who the Hoodoo Gurus is, you need to go discover them. Fantastic band, big college band back in the day. And I got elected in a landslide and became social chairman. The next day, I began working on the Hoodoo Gurus and immediately found out that they were going to be in Australia basically for the half a year around our big celebration. So I guess I'm a typical politician, promising things I couldn't in no way, shape, or form deliver. Anyway, as I say, if you've got any heads up, if we can, you know, when we get together, let's all try to get to the same camp. In more serious news, I'm sure you've heard about this now, YouTube is done. YouTube and Google, the parent company, is doing what they do, which is control the flow of information. YouTube is taking down several video channels associated with high-profile anti-vaccine activists that should read vaccine safety advocates, but I read it as it's written, including Dr. Mercola, Joseph Mercola, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who experts say are partially responsible for helping seed the skepticism that has contributed to slowing vaccination rates across the country. It's part of a new set of policies aimed at cutting down on anti-vaccine content, or again, that should read vaccine safety content. On the Google-owned site, YouTube will ban any videos that claim that commonly used vaccines approved by health authorities are ineffective or dangerous. The company previously blocked videos that made these claims about coronavirus vaccines, but not ones for other vaccines like those for measles or chickenpox. Misinformation researchers have for years said that the popularity of anti-vaccine content on YouTube was contributing to growing skepticism of life-saving vaccines in the United States and around the world. It's kind of interesting. I did read a long list of the top 35 countries, America being number 35 in the Bloomberg Health Index, and the vast majority of those countries do not have mandatory vaccine programs. They have recommended vaccines, but they actually allow their citizens to choose. And they're still ranking higher than us in world health rankings. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? But to be honest, this kind of censorship is extremely concerning. It's really actually a very serious issue here in the United States. I'm stunned that we're reporting about that here in the U.S. But I have prepared a formal response from the Mike Madison Show and WYAB, and I believe that I speak for all of our over-the-air radio show hosts when I say,
you can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
Oh, yeah.
You can't touch this.
Talk radio. Over the air.
My
info.
So hard makes me say, oh my Lord, thank you for blessing me. What am I to make? Just good when you know you're
right.
A super dope homeboy from the Oak Town, and I'm known as such. And this is a beat up you can't touch. I told you, homeboy, you can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you know, you can't touch
oh,
this.
Oh, yeah. Look at little old talk radio. Little old talk radio. That's right. I tell you what, everything is moved online. Everybody with a camera and a microphone's got a YouTube channel. I am one of those out there in the vast universe of podcasts, ready to be taken down at a moment's notice. But who's left standing? The dinosaur that is talk radio. And it's mostly conservative. I've never been able to figure out why liberal talk radio can't work. Maybe it's just hours and hours a day of hypocrisy. It just doesn't sell. But how about that? This just keeps becoming more and more apparent that there are only a few spots left. And it is just really funny that in this day and age where, you know, there's so many things that are moving to the new technologies and they are shutting those doors, but at the same time, they can't touch this. And I will say WYAB is one of the real exceptions to that as well, because we are not even self-censored here. Great kudos. You should support the station and certainly give thanks to the owner here who allows his hosts to go on and speak their minds. There are many stations in the market, WGOPs, I call them, and they are pretty much told what position that they will take. You don't really know what they actually think because they have, in the case of large companies, corporate masters, state politics masters. And so you don't really know what you're getting. But WYAB has somehow bucked that trend. I'm so grateful to be here. And I think if you listen for any period of time to our local host, you realize we don't self-censor. We don't get censored by the radio stations as well. It can get a little discouraging sometimes, though. It's hard to be on the front lines when you are waging this battle against authoritarians. They're throwing everything they can at us. And some days it gets very discouraging to see people falling in line with, you know, the stuff that comes out of mainstream media and just accepting the online censorship. It's hard to tell if we're making any difference at all. And some days you just think, should we just give up? And then you stop and you think, well, we can't because... Oh, yeah. That's right. We're too legit to quit. I mean, you got to love any kind of news stories that bleed you into making MC Hammer music appropriate for the radio. It's great. And that's just a taste. Those couple of songs right there, the vibe that brings, that's a taste of what you can expect if I am elected social chairman of my FEMA camp. You know, this is the direction that we're headed in, people. So anyway, this is Orwellian stuff. I got into a conversation yesterday with somebody very close to me that seems to be okay with this. I had to retreat from the conversation because I had to circle back, as Jen Psaki said. I've got to make another pass at him. I found myself being tongue-tied and surprised by the acquiescence to all of these different COVID things. And so I found myself wondering exactly what to say. I abandoned the conversation. I'm actually going to have to go back in and try to convince this person that what we're seeing is pure insanity. This is not normal in this country. So, I mean, I literally had to go collect my thoughts and take another pass at them. So I'll do that again. This has just turned into bizarro world. Got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
Yes, sir, I am. This is Wade. How you doing today, sir?
Hey, good, Wade. What's going on?
Please don't be discouraged at any time. What you have... Y'all reached a lot of people and waking up a lot of people, and people need to just back your sponsors.
Amen.
You know, Chad Stevens, Withers Florist, all of them.
Yeah.
All the way through all y'all shows, if people will support. I mean, I know you're growing. You have to be growing.
Oh, we are getting. I mean, I'll tell you what. Over the last 6 months, I think we've seen a tremendous amount of growth here. A lot of people have moved here because we're just not. And it's a niche. You know what it is? I mean, you may sacrifice some people when you take a hard stance like WYEB has. You don't please everybody, but the people who are seeking freedom, who are against these mandates, against lockdowns, against forced medical procedures on employees or children or anybody, they've only got one place to go. I mean, so that's kind of what we're collecting, and I couldn't be more happy or proud with the audience we've gotten.
And it's sad that we only have a few places to go, But you are the beacon in Mississippi.
I find it ironic, funny, refreshing, uplifting that little old talk radio. I mean, I'm telling you, over-the-air talk radio has been pronounced dead probably 100 times over the last 20 to 30 years. Well, really, over the last maybe 10 to 15, just because everybody moved into the digital gulag. And I just find it really kind of ironic that when all is said and done, it may be the last platform standing.
I think it will, too.
Yeah. Well, thanks, man.
Have an awesome day.
Thanks, man. I sure appreciate the call. All right, we'll be right back with more independent, over-the-air, uncensored talk radio. Be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. And we have with us Stephen Utroska from Americans for Prosperity. He's in early today, so we'll get some extra time with him. Stephen, thanks for coming in.
Always a pleasure to be on.
Stephen just told me that he's been undergoing some media training, so we're expecting some big things today.
Yeah, let me tell you what they said. So I went out to D.C. last week and met with some other groups and things, but I met with a group that does media training. They're really one of the best in the industry, especially on our side of things. And one of the things they told me, so I went through some mock interviews and stuff where they were pretending to be CNN reporters.
Oh, wow.
You know, and they reported me and really trying to hammer me, you know, trying to get me to say something. Well, they brought up some conspiracy theories,
so I
went into it, you know. And afterwards,
like what kind of stuff?
Oh, well, they were asking about January 6th type things. You know, what was it? What do you think about QAnon and all those things? And I went into it. You know, I was talking with them, like, you know, pretending like they were CNN reporters. And then afterwards, they said, yeah, that's something you should never go into. Like, that's a leading question. They are wanting you to go off the rails for that. So today, I heard you earlier talking about the camps. So I'm not going to talk about the camps today. I'm not going to let you pull me off into the camp. But I do want to say that if you go to camps, they're going to separate people like you and me. So I don't know that they would let us have you as my social chair.
That's the beauty of the FEMA camps, as I believe they will be structured, is they've got to pull the freedom lovers out. I mean, it's just, you know, I guess I could be with freedom lovers I don't know yet, but, you know, we make fast friends. So,
yeah.
I want to know. I mean, maybe I could set up a business in the meantime taking reservations.
There you go.
Yeah, you start a...
Yeah. So, and then you talk about Thomas Mass, you know, his chief of staff is Matt Gertler. He's a good friend of mine. I know Matt for quite a few years now. So he and I went out and had a drink together and caught up on it. So he's been telling me some of the behind-the-scenes stories about Massey and some of the other few actual freedom fighters in D.C. So I had a good time up there.
Yeah. How many do you think there are in Washington, in our Congress and our Senate? How many people do you think are legit?
So you've got 100 in the Senate, 435 congressmen in the House, so, you know, 535. Yeah, you know, I think you could certainly count on two hands how many we have there.
Yeah.
Less than 10. Yeah.
Yeah, I would think Thomas Massey, Rand Paul, Mike Lee's very good on a bunch of stuff. I really miss, who was the guy from North Carolina? Walter, can't remember his name. We lost one just a couple of years ago. But, I mean,
yeah,
you know, there's so few of them that when you lose one, it stands out.
Well, and, you know, I mean, to be fair, you have some guys up there that make right calls some of the time or right calls half of the time. You know, but you just have very few that make the right calls, principled stances all the time.
Well, I think that's the problem with politics a lot, is that principle is very, very rare. And Thomas Massey has a core set of principles, you know, to the point where he demanded a real vote on that massive spending bill.
Right.
And this is in contrast. This will get me in trouble. People won't like this. Donald Trump doesn't have core principles like, you know, for freedom and for fiscal restraint that Thomas Massey does. So Thomas Massey tries to force everybody during the air quotes here in the studio pandemic to come and do a vote. Donald Trump blasts him, wants him run out of the Republican Party because Thomas Massey dared to request a vote for, what was that, a $2.1 trillion spending bill? They wanted to just be able to do it by phone call or Zoom or something. And Thomas Massey said, no, if the postmen are going to work, if garbage collectors are going to work, then we can get our asses up to here and vote on $2 trillion. Trump was furious with him, wanted him voted out.
Yeah, well, and he's been running out of the Republican caucus. You know, he doesn't pay the dues though. That's the thing.
Yeah,
you got to pay your dues. And I can't remember how much. It's like $400,000 a year that you have to pay dues.
So you raise money from your constituents to
give to leadership.
Yeah.
So that then that way you're buying chairmanships,
right?
And, if your party is the majority,
right?
If your party's not the majority, in almost every government sense, whether it's federal government, state government, every other state in the union, except for ours, the majority party owns all the chairmanships. In Mississippi, that's not the case.
Why?
Well, in the House, actually, Philip Gunn, he does give all the chairmanships to Republicans because we got a supermajority in the House. We got a supermajority of Republicans in the Senate, too, with a Republican president in the Senate, which is the Lieutenant Governor Hoseman.
Yeah.
But for some reason, we don't. So our Senate... I forgot how many. I mean, it's like half the Democrats in the Senate have a chairmanship.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah.
It's almost like Delbert Hoseman's not a real conservative guy. Am I jumping to a conclusion there?
Well, hey, you call it as you see it.
Yeah. Wow.
So
that's interesting. Well, yeah. The media training stuff is interesting. I probably should pick your brain. I could probably learn some things.
Yeah. Well, no, that's part of some of the training that we'll have we're doing our grassroots Leadership Academy training right now. You've come to the last two. We've got four more that we'll have, over the next 4 weeks, basically every Tuesday. So, if there's anybody listening that hasn't come out or hasn't seen that, they're still welcome to come out. You just have to make four out of the six get the certificate to show that you completed it. But that doesn't matter.
But it's good information
It's great information.
It's been very interesting. It certainly is well attended. I mean, the thing's just about full, isn't it? I don't know if there are any seats left. So, yeah, and it's been great meeting those people. I mean, that's kind of the nucleus of our FEMA camp there in that room.
Yeah, that's it.
Hopefully we can all get assigned.
It's been fantastic. We've had a good turnout, actually more than what we thought. We're doing it at our new office. We've got a new office, so we set it up, and we set our when we move to a new office, we specifically got an office space that has room for training so we can do activist training. And on the first night, we're pulling tables out, putting up new chairs in the back because more people showed up. And we actually had more people this Tuesday than we had last Tuesday.
Right, yeah.
More people showed up on the second week than the first. I guess the word got out, more people showed up.
Yeah.
So we're
It's great, and I've met a lot of people, listeners to the show, that listen to WYEB. It's been great to put a face to those things. And for people listening, what this is it's basically kind of a message on, and we're really just starting to get into the kind of the organizational how to, create alliances with groups and put things together. So it's been interesting to kind of go through, why you need to become an activist, what the role of the citizen is versus the role of government. I mean, I believe it's got a pretty good libertarian bent. I know y'all are apolitical, but it highlights the idea that the people need to be in charge and how you get there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, because we're a nonpartisan organization, we try not to use labels. But what I usually tell people is we have four tenets of what we believe in, our principles: limited government, lower taxes, individual liberty, and free markets. So you can take those four and put whatever label you want on it. But, most people can understand what that means. That's what we teach from. And, I think that people on our side of it have for a long time not been as successful in really just community leadership, getting our community together, riled up, and out of the door to actually do things.
Look, freedom lovers have been on their hands. I mean, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a lot of people who are on that side of issues are just so busy because they do believe in free market. They're out there working, they're involved, they're raising families, and maybe the left is not as encumbered by some of those things as the right is. But
yeah, I think part of it is most of the people who have a liberty mindset are individualists.
Right.
Right. I mean, we believe we just want to stick to ourselves. We just want everybody to leave us alone. The other side is very community minded. They want to come together because they need each other's resources, and they have to come together as that community to do things. And that's why I really encourage anybody to read, and I don't read too deep into it, but Saul Alinsky, who was he was basically Obama's predecessor in the movement in Chicago for community building and doing that. And he wrote a book, Rules for Radicals, and it's very communist, Marxist bent, but I tell you what, he tells his people how to community organize.
Yeah, so the thing you pull from it is not the ideology, but the tactics. How to put together a movement. And God knows, look around. They've been successful. Yep. There's no doubt about that.
Yep, so that's right.
Now, I've been in that class for 2 weeks now. When do we get to the courses on, you know, how to properly construct a Molotov cocktail, how to slip out of zip ties, tactical gear.
Probably not this one.
Not this next week.
But some of the things we will do is, more about how to be a leader in your community, but also about messaging. How to tell your message to people in a way that they understand it, and in a way that gets them wanting to know more and do more.
Right. So. Well, you know, I think this is I think that's important to everybody who's even engaged. I have a very strong belief and a very strong stance on the show against what I call lateral hate, meaning it is this idea of screaming at your neighbor, disinviting your cousin from dinner because you vote differently.
Right.
That is not working. I mean, all you do is harden someone's positions to scream at them, call them an idiot, call them a Nazi, call them a commie, whatever that stuff. It never works. The best thing to do is, you know, to ask people questions and form things. But boy, I have never seen an example. You know, people talk about how polarized we are, and most everybody's tactic is to just further polarize. They'll complain about the polarization, and then they'll tweet out that everybody who voted for Joe Biden is a brain dead communist idiot. You know, and I'm just thinking, you know, I don't agree with the vote for Joe Biden myself. But there are good people who just maybe don't understand a few things. And if you approach them the right way, you can draw more numbers to you.
Yeah, that's right. No, absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
We've enjoyed that. This is our first. So, you know, we've been a AFP chapter in Mississippi for 6 years now. And this is our first full length 6 week training that we've done, kind of an intensive training. We've done, you know, one off, you know, one night trainings here and there, you know, throughout the years, but this is our first intensive training. And so I'm glad we've had the crowd show up that we needed to do it. So we'll want to do it again.
Well, I know there's a lot of people in there that are tackling mask mandates. Those are the people that I was most familiar with at the beginning. And I've met other people who have other issues. So it's going to be interesting to see how they can take skills from that class and make a more effective movement. Because you're right, it's kind of like, as a libertarian, you know, I've had the chance to meet libertarian candidates and have some involvement, not formal, but be around people in the Libertarian Party. Freedom-minded people, it's like herding cats, because you're exactly right. They are individuals. None of us want to be ruled, so it's almost like you almost repulse it a little bit when somebody takes charge of a group, because, you know, we're all thinking constantly and we've got our own ideas, but, you know, there is a way. We've got to get these people operating in concert.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, the benefit for us too is, you know, we are more economically driven in what we do. So, you know, the foundation is who's putting on the training, Americans Prosperity Foundation, which is our C3, but then the C4, Americans Prosperity, you know, we work in a lot of different policy areas, and some of those, you know, generally geared towards economic issues. And so there's some things we can't work in, or we just choose not to. So there's some of our activists that take that out on their own to do, you know, things that we believe in personally, we just don't as an organization. So that's actually a benefit to us too, because we're training people not only for the issues that we believe in, but that they can take that out and use that for issues that we can't work in.
Right. Yeah, it's about concepts and tactics. Same way with, you know, it's almost like you're the other Saul Alinsky type thing.
Just
the process to get it done, rather than, you know, any particular ideology. Use it how you see fit. But anyway, so those are Tuesday nights from 6 o'clock to 7:15 in the Woodlands at your office over there.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, I mean, the easiest way is just go on our AFP Foundation Mississippi Facebook page, and the event's up on there. You can find it and just sign up for it on Facebook, or just show up if you see the address. You know, you don't have to register beforehand.
And you feed us. This is my favorite thing about AFP. I'm really not sure. I mean, I kind of like the material, but I'm always interested to see what the menu is. And you're one of the best organizations for food.
Yeah,
no
doubt. I'm always interested to see what the food is too, because I'm not the one ordered it. So I just show up, see what it is too.
Well, you know, your buddy there, Cade Yates, in your organization, texted me the other day. I'm sure he texted all of the people saying, "Hey, just a reminder, Tuesday night we're going to have another event, and wanted to make sure you're going to be there so we can get a head count for the food." And I responded to him. I said, "Yes, I'll have the lobster and the
filet, medium rare. I got there. I got the same damn tacos everybody else got.
Yeah.
So anyway, we need to work on that. But other than that, great event. All right, we're talking to Stephen Utroska, Americans for Prosperity. We'll be right back.
At first I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along, and so you're...
All right, we're here with Stephen Utroska, Americans for Prosperity. I'll bring something up. We just got a few minutes in this hour, and then we're going to get into infrastructure bill. And, I mean, it gets the more I hear, the worse it gets. One thing I thought that was interesting, I saw a story today. There's a writer. Are you familiar with Brandon Smith? He writes for Alt Market. It's just a blog. But he's a good writer. He has an article out today. I won't get into it, but it's just something that, you know, it feels like Mississippi is missing a lot of opportunities around coronavirus to be a Texas, a Florida, a South Dakota to some degree. And he wrote a piece, and the title of it is "We Will Not Comply. Red States Should Offer Sanctuary to Businesses, Military, and Medical Personnel." And, you know, this is frustrating to me because Mississippi seems to need to do something unique, something disruptive. I guess that's the catchphrase now, be a disruptor, you know. And it seems like that's a great opportunity to attract a bunch of businesses here. If you've got, you know, states that are forcing employers to do things they don't want to do, you know, we talk about getting rid of state income. I mean, there's just a lot of things that could be done that are creative rather than just sitting around and waiting for the next ribbon cutting on one manufacturing plant per, you know, every 8 years, which is what seems like our tact is. And I mean, does nobody have the appetite for that? Gunn doesn't have an appetite for it. Tate Reeves doesn't have an appetite for, like, really setting ourselves apart and creating something interesting down here.
Yeah, no, I think actually, especially on the healthcare side, some of our businesses could step up and do it. So I saw yesterday, I think it was in Birmingham, somewhere in North Alabama, a hospital there, a big hospital, I think it was the University of Alabama Hospital, came back out and said they have decided to, you know, pull back their requirements for vaccines because they were going to have so many nurses.
Oh, I was about to ask.
So they decided to roll back that requirement for employment.
Right.
And so think, you know, I mean, in Mississippi, we're, you know, I forgot what the number was last time I saw. I mean, it was a huge amount, like 200 and something nurses, you know, that we're below, you know, what we normally should be.
Right.
In a non, you know, COVID time,
right,
you know, we're 200 below what we should be. So we actually should have more than that now, because of all the, you know, medical, you know, every bed's filled or whatever. So what if our hospitals came out and said, hey, none of our hospitals are going to require it. You know, I mean, that's a private decision that the hospitals can make, you know, especially the private hospitals. But, you know, the hospitals up in New York's, that have lost so many people that they're now having to pull in the National Guard,
right?
You know, because they fired so many people that won't get it.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, think how many people we could be attracting
right,
for that, something
absolutely.
Like that, and that's outside of the government.
Right.
You know, that's something that our private hospitals could decide. Say, no, you know what? We have so many openings now already that we're not going to require this and fire more people. We're actually going to open it up. And hey, New Yorkers, look, Mississippi's actually great this time of the year. you know, I mean,
right.
and get them down. I mean, that's what we
can
do.
Well, I mean, you know, that hospital in Alabama, they had to stumble into it. You know, you say that about the hospitals. Something has gone on. I saw a presentation from Dr. Peter McCullough. I don't know if you've been following him at all, but he's very well credentialed. He's a cardiologist, but he was editor of journals. He's got, you know, hundreds of papers published. It's just a very, very accomplished guy. And he gave a speech the other day and he said, you know, the medical community, they're in some kind of a state of shock or something. He said he can't identify what's going on with the doctors that he has practiced with for, I think, 30 years. They have just kind of lost their minds. The beautiful thing about what happens in Alabama, number one, some nurses stuck together and exercised their power over that, you know, as people. They didn't just give in, which is what most people do. They just shrug their shoulders and go, well, I guess I'll get it. You know, the numbers of people who were hesitant, had they stood their ground, probably would have turned back these policies damn near everywhere they were trying to exercise. But that hospital, and there'll be one hospital in Alabama for sure that will not be short on nurses.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And it's that one.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I said on the last segment, you know, I went up to D.C. last week and met with quite a few people when I was up there. One of the guys I met with, a very interesting guy, is Dr. Scott Atlas. He was actually – are you familiar with him?
Well, yeah, Trump brought him
in.
Right. Never got any airtime to speak of, but yeah, he was there.
Yeah, so he was there. So he, I talked to him, you know, pretty extensively about his time with the Trump administration and all the data he's done, you know, put together since then. He's about to come out with a book called A Plague Upon Our House, My Fight at Trump's White House to Stop COVID from destroying America, but you'll love him.
I mean, absolutely.
You know, I mean, he's, you know, he just shows all the data,
right?
And he said, you know, look, he said if it wasn't for travel restrictions, he said I have to travel for work, and he goes international, and he said so many places are requiring a vaccine card. He said if it wasn't for that, he wouldn't have got the vaccine, and he said he told all of his kids not to get the vaccine. Now, that's their personal choice, again, but,
right,
you know, this is coming from, you know, Trump's, you know, basically medical advisor, you know, while Trump was going through this pandemic while he was president, and now he's about to come out with this book. So,
see, this is my great frustration with Donald Trump, and I know I anger everybody when I say this anytime I mention it. Well, you don't dare criticize Trump because Biden's so bad. It's a weird bar, but Anthony Fauci should have gotten the big cartoon hook off of the stage at some point, just pulled right off the stage, and Scott Atlas should have been planted in there. He speaks well. He's reasonable. I don't think he would have drawn a lot of unnecessary anger. You know, a lot of people would have would disagree with him anyway, but he was good. He was so in the background. So just putting him into the administration accomplished nothing.
Yeah.
You know, but so it's like Trump had this instinct to bring a good guy in, but then he didn't do anything to stop the bad people talking. You know what I mean? It just was incredibly frustrating.
Yep. Yeah. But, yeah, no, it was a good trip, though. I met with lots of good people up there. So I'm interested to go. It was actually a personal trip. It was outside of AFP. I went up there, had some meetings with some friends that I have up in D.C., and then I was able to connect with quite a few people like this.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you got some good dirt we can do off-air. I'm expecting some things that we can't discuss on-air, some inside baseball. All right, got to take a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We've got Stephen Utroska in from Americans for Prosperity. We do this every Thursday for the Freedom and Prosperity Hour. I've got a lot of kind of some random stories I wanted to talk to you about. But we were talking about the state of Mississippi before we left. You know, doing anything interesting, and this Brandon Smith's article says something along the lines of, why don't red states offer to be, you know, sanctuaries for businesses and everything else. I mean, it just feels to me, and I think I'm repeating myself with you, it feels to me like our legislature needs to start shielding us from the federal government. And again, we say the same thing over and over. It's tough to do when you're, you know, beholden to the federal government for all of this money and stuff. But did you see these fines for these vaccine mandates for employers of over 100 people that the Biden administration is rolling out?
No.
Let's see. Buried on page 168 of the House Democrats' 2,465-page mega bill is a tenfold increase in fines for employers that willfully, repeatedly, or even seriously violate a section of labor law that deals with hazardous health or serious physical harm to their employees. Increased fines on employers could run as high as $70,000 for serious infractions and $700,000 for willful, repeated violations. So they're a 10x on, you know, fines against businesses, these kinds of things. And these are the kinds of laws that are coming out, or I won't say laws. These are the kinds of policies that are coming out of the Biden administration that it does feel like a state that puts its foot in the ground and says, look, you come down here, our attorney general. I don't know what the mechanism is to protect businesses from this, but it feels like this is a ripe time to try to find some business sanctuary states.
Yeah, well, look, you know, the executive order started with Washington. I mean, executive orders have been a part, and actually, interestingly, the president who wrote the most executive orders out of any president in history was Calvin Coolidge. He wrote over 1,200 executive orders. So, you know, he was silent cow, but he, you know, spoke very loudly with his pen, I guess.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not a fan of executive orders. The way Biden's doing this is he's using OSHA.
Right.
You know, he's using OSHA to come down and basically say, well, this is an unsafe and unhealthy environment for your employees. So they're just, you know, jabbing them with these made up regulations that, you know, OSHA has the authority to do. But, you know, eventually it will get thrown out in court, but it takes somebody to fight. It takes somebody to stand up. And the more, you know, big companies just lay down to it, the harder that's going to be.
Yeah. Is there a challenge right now to this nut jobbery from Biden on if you have more than 100 employees, you have to mandate the vaccination?
Yeah, I haven't seen one. But
there's,
I mean,
gotta be.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, they're just making stuff up.
Yes,
100 employees.
Right.
Like, what's the threshold? So if you have 99,
right.
No.
Everything is arbitrary. People don't seem to really recognize that. Yeah, it's not 105. It's not 95. It's not 74. I mean, you know, everything is so arbitrary. And so to accept it as, and this is my problem with the vast majority of laws that people say, you know, conservatives are, I think, kind of guilty of this to a point where they just say, well, don't do the crime if you can't do the time. It's this idea that any politician or bureaucrat sets in a law or regulation, then you're only a good citizen if you follow it.
Right.
And I think, no, you resist bad ones. We have the discernment to know what's overreach, and you're not morally or ethically responsible to obey unjust laws. I believe, I mean, you may pay a price for it, you know, you may get in trouble for it, but this idea of always, I follow the law, I'm a good citizen, you know, these lawbreakers, you just got to be careful because these are the kinds of laws that eventually come where we're all going to get ensnared if we don't. But, you know, the people who say that, they lose their argument now because there's so many of these laws.
Yeah, well, when you make up arbitrary laws and arbitrary regulations and just come up with numbers from thin air, you start having companies that have 101 employees.
You're right, exactly.
Fire two of them.
Right, yeah, exactly.
You know, now
stop growing.
Yeah, I was in a meeting, and you know, some people were asking me about, you know, about this specifically, and they said, you know, I know a guy who owns a company, you know, and he's been very successful, and he's got, you know, 105 employees, and that's what he's thinking about doing, is he's going to fire 6 employees.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you know, if he has to do that, that's what he has to do, but I hope he hires those 6 employees back as, you know, contractors.
Right, right, yeah.
You know, and that way they're not on the rolls, you know, but, you know, there's ways around it, and the, you know, the invisible hand of the free market will always find a way. You know, and that's what it is.
Well, the problem is, I totally agree with that. Absolutely, 100%. You know, free market would solve just about everything. Just, I'd say the problem, it's just funny. It's almost like drug laws. You know, they're constantly trying to smack down kratom and then bath salts. And then, you know, they just keep having to smack these things down, never realizing it's prohibition in the first place that causes all these products that we don't like for popping up. But it's like they're always trying to find ways to crack down on something new. You know, when you go to contractors, then, you know, that's what happened with gig workers. You know, now these governments are trying to crack down on gig workers all of a sudden. So they're always trying to play whack-a-mole to stop freedom.
That's because the hospitality hotels and casinos and taxi drivers and all that, they all have very powerful lobbies too.
Right, right. You know? I was talking about somebody about today. You know, these people in New York City, I was talking to Clay before the show, and people in New York City used to have to get a medallion to start a taxi, to run a taxi in New York City was like $1 million to get that, because they were limited by the government how many you could have. Uber just comes in and steps all over it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And
those
things are suddenly worth $30,000 or something like that.
Yeah. Well, and I was in D.C. again, you know, last week, and now they've got scooters that just hang out like all over the streets. You know, so you just literally have an app on your phone. If you need to get, you know, 2 miles down the road, don't worry about taking a taxi or an Uber. They charge you 35 cents per mile for a scooter. So you just pick up a, you know, scooter that somebody left laying on the side of the road. You scan with your phone with an app. You jump on it. You ride down the road. And so, you know, when I was in D.C., I took some time to actually look at some of the sites, and so I rode a scooter around everywhere. You know, which was great.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't even have to talk to anybody. You know, I can be the introvert that I like to be sometimes, and, you know, just stay with myself and ride around on my scooter and look at the sights and not have to talk to anybody.
Well, it is amazing. I try to impress this upon particularly people, friends that I have that are on the left, and really people on the right, if they would realize, if they get out of this mentality of we just need more of our party, and if we just have more Republicans, really the key is you want less of all of it. I mean, you really don't want to aspire to have anybody in government rise to a position of greater power to control more things. Just need to neuter these people, because free market, it fixes just everything. It's really quite amazing how I'm on LinkedIn. It's really the only social media that I do. And I follow a couple of people that are constantly putting out little videos on innovation. And I would just see these things on a daily basis. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's just such a great idea.
Yeah.
No government involved, no nothing. It's just they come up with some of the most genius things, some of the most creative stuff just out of humans. I think if we ever just unleashed humans to be humans and just to try to, you know, there's a desire to create and fix problems, it would be amazing to live in a society where we were just free to do that.
Yeah, there's a guy, Art Carden, wrote a book called Age of the Bourgeois, Leave Me Alone and I'll Make You Rich.
Yeah.
And basically the premise of the book is you know, capitalism, because of people's greed and wanting to make money for themselves, they have collectively made everybody else richer too.
Right.
And so if you look at the, you know, there's a chart that they have, and lots of economists like to use this chart, but it shows the, you know, basically the curve of poverty, world poverty. And you know, for all of existence of, you know, written history for man, you know, basically everybody was poor up until you started hitting into like the Industrial Revolution. And then from the Industrial Revolution until now, it's just spiked.
Yeah.
You know, because
around the world.
Yeah. I mean, around the world, you know. And so poverty on a world sense is considered less than $1.90 a day. Huh. So there's not too many people, you know, when you look at a percentage of population in the U.S., not too many people fall into that. Now, there are some. There are people who are homeless and, you know, don't have any money, but there's very few of those, and even the people who are homeless usually aren't taking advantage of the programs, community or government programs that are out there available for them. But yeah, it's interesting to see how capitalism, you know, has brought the entire world,
yep,
you know, out of the stricken poverty that we used to have. You know, not entirely, but I mean, the statistics are just off the charts.
I think that capitalism has been so the term has been so misused. I think very little on the large scale of things is true capitalism. And so, like, the targets of the left, when they bash capitalism, they're really bashing cronyism, but nobody stands up and says it. They're bashing, you know, companies that have a connection to government or who benefit from artificially repressed interest rates. Those kinds of things that have nothing to do with free markets is what creates these behemoths that the left really hates, but they still call it capitalism.
Right. Yeah, it's not laissez-faire capitalism. Yeah. No. And what's funny is they love to harp on the ills and evils of capitalism, but what you're saying is it's corporatism and it's cronyism.
Right.
And they like that too, just on their side.
Right.
You know, they don't want the right hand side doing it for their people, but the left hand side wants to do it just for their people. And so they're gonna come out, talk about the ills and evils of it on the other side.
Right.
Yeah, you know, exactly. But if they get the opportunity, you know, well, they're gonna put their guy in.
Right.
You know, that's gonna give their people, you know, the benefits of a crony capitalist system. So it's,
well, you know, I remember watching the
puppet
Occupy
on the left and the puppet on the right.
Exactly. I used to watch the Occupy Wall Street protesters, and I loved it. I really liked that movement, except for what, you know, when they'd interview somebody and you'd find out what the prescription is. They wanted a bigger government, and I just was screaming, no, the big, huge government is what created all of the moral hazard that just led to the banks being bailed out.
Yeah.
You know, so they're prescriptive. But God love them, they knew something was wrong. And I would watch the Tea Party protest were at the same time as Occupy. And it was like Ross and Rachel on Friends. I so badly wanted them to get together. I was like, you guys have got a lot in common. Just get together, you know, Tea Party, teach these people, you know, away from and Occupy, you know, show your dissatisfaction with the system. They were so close to getting it right, and they both just melted back into the Republican and Democrat Party and did nothing.
Yeah, well, that's the, you know, the autonomous zone that they created. Or is that Portland? Is
yeah,
that where
Chaz.
It was? Chaz, the autonomous zone. I love that on their official Twitter page, they posted, hey, whoever is setting up an autonomous zone within the autonomous zone, please don't do that. So, again, they love it for them,
right,
but
right,
not for anybody else.
There is a lot of for me, but not for thee in the left, for sure. All right, we got to take a break. I'm going to run one more just bizarre story about you. You know, we'd see all the spending going on. I know Americans for Prosperity pays a lot of attention to that. We'll talk about an infrastructure bill. And then this one crazy idea that keeps coming up to address our huge debt burden. And maybe you can explain this to me because it makes no sense to me. We'll do that when we come back. Stay with us.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul.
All right, we are back talking to Stephen Trosko, Americans for Prosperity. What I was trying to find, and I kind of lost my story here. We're bumping up in Washington, D.C. against another debt limit. There's, you know, the typical hysteria around a government shutdown, which is just I hate those things. I would be so excited if they would actually shut it down for a month and we'd save the money, but you know, they go back and they restore everybody's salary. They make a big deal about it. It should show the American people we don't need, you know, I don't know how many millions of government employees they lay off during these shutdowns, but it should show the American people we don't need these people, that we could have a smaller government. But anyway, one of the things they're floating around now, and this is an idea that I think originally started in, 2011, talk of a $1 trillion U.S. coin has returned to Washington now that Congress is mired in another political impasse over raising the debt ceiling. You said off air you weren't really familiar with this, but champions of that idea point to a 1997 law which in theory would allow Treasury Secretary to authorize a platinum coin at the value of his or her discretion. The president could direct the Treasury Secretary to mint a $1 trillion piece that could be deposited in the Federal Reserve and used to cover big portion of Washington's bills.
Yeah. Let me tell you how that goes. So back in, was it like the 70s or so, Zimbabwe was considered the breadbasket of Africa.
Yeah.
I mean, they were the wealthiest nation on the continent of Africa. And then they put some, left of center people in charge, and they started, turning into more of a socialistic type government. And between the 70s and 2008, things started going down pretty quickly. And so in 2008, they printed a $100 trillion bill,
A single one.
Oh no! They ended up printing. Thousands of them.
Oh yeah, I thought you meant originally like it was a pilot program.
It built up to this.
Yeah, right.
But by the time you start printing or coining $1 trillion currency, things are going pretty bad.
Well, this is what is so absurd about this, and it just shows. I keep commenting on the fact we live in an age now where you just say things. Yeah, and then the media takes them and runs with them like they're fact, and then it'll run in one news story, and then the New York Times will cover the story from the first paper. Say things, and so this is one of those. You just print a coin and you just say, like some kind of a magical spell, this piece of metal is worth $1 trillion. And so what that will do is just sit on the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. They would acknowledge they have this $1 trillion asset, when there's absolutely no basis in reality for why that would be there. And the rest of the world would laugh at that and realize for the Ponzi scheme it is.
But. Yeah, I mean, you got to understand, these people have absolutely no concept of what economics even is.
Right.
That's like the White House press secretary said, they're just appalled that businesses would raise their production or their cost of products because they're taxing them more now. She just couldn't believe that businesses would raise prices to cover the taxes that the administration is now taxing people more.
Yeah.
That they've raised taxes, so all of a sudden companies are going to raise product prices. Unheard of. Unheard of.
Well, I mean, you look at this and you just think, and what's so funny is that, we live our lives by kind of a code that our parents tell us very early in age, which if it sounds like it's too good to be true, it usually is. And that's what these kinds of things are. But these are official policy of the most powerful nation on planet Earth. They do these kinds of things. The Federal Reserve, out of thin air, creates dollars and goes out and buys mortgage-backed securities. That money has no value. It came from nowhere, but suddenly it owns these assets that are responsible for the debt underpinning real homes, Americans' homes. These things are just conjured out of thin air, and we expect to run the world's most powerful nation that way for any period of time is insane.
Well, I hate to tell you this, Mike, but since we got taken off the gold standard, our cash, any cash, whether it's a dollar or trillion-dollar bill, it's still pretty much worthless.
Yes, it
is. On the sense that nobody's going to barter with you, you know, for a piece of paper.
Well, there are new toilet paper shortages coming into Costco, so keep your dollars handy.
Well, it's, you know, Venezuela went through the same thing. They call it hyperinflation when inflation is so high that you have to start printing new bills, new denominations of bills. And so Venezuela, you know, they were printing, you know, these $100,000 bills. And $100,000 bill was, you know, worth like less than a dollar of ours. And literally I saw a meme that had someone wrapping their children's presents for Christmas in $100,000 bills because the amount of $100,000 bills that it cost them to wrap the present was less than it would have cost to go buy wrapping paper.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so the paper that the $100,000 denomination was printed on was worth less than wrapping paper.
Good.
So that's what they used.
That's where we're headed if we keep doing this. So we'll talk about, when we come back, we'll talk about infrastructure bills, and then you may have some updates too. We're tracking medical marijuana. Seems like we're dialing in on something here is about to happen with a special session. I heard Tate Reeves actually say something through his mouth a couple of days ago. You're raising your eyebrows. Is there something I don't know?
Well, we'll see.
Oh, dear Lord. I don't want this to go on any longer. All right, we'll figure out what he's smirking about over there when we come back. Stay with me.
I tear my heart open, I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real. I tear my heart open just to...
All right, we are back talking to Stephen Utrosko, Americans for Prosperity. Did you see that the police, you know, we're about to talk, just touch on what's going on in the medical marijuana front. I'm almost scared to ask you at this point with the look you just gave me before the break. But police have put out a notice that, you know, because medical marijuana marijuana edibles around the country are more ubiquitous now, and some of the wrapping looks like typical candy, they're telling parents to be careful that none of their kids actually get any edibles in their things. And I, as a public service announcement, I wanted to let everybody know, if you do suspect your child has gotten any edibles in their Halloween candy this year, you can give me a call and I will come pick that up and dispose of it for you. So, I mean, I can't do much more for the community, but I do like to give back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No doubt. Well, look, who's going to be giving away their edibles?
Yeah.
Like the guys that have that, you know, that buy that type of stuff, they're not giving those away.
Right.
You know,
it's always an accident. It's always an accident. There'll be 10-20 stories about it this year to fearmonger. But yet, you know, you can make any alcohol. I mean, they've got liquors that taste like butterscotch. You know,
yeah.
I mean, these things happen. This is just something new. People need to understand. Adults need to be responsible. Kids have always gotten into things. It's, you know, it is what it is. All right. So what's the deal with medical marijuana?
Yeah. So I know Nate came on last week and talked some about it. At that time, we'd kind of heard some rumblings about what was going to be in the bill. You know, the actual bill has been put out now. It's not publicly put out, but there's enough legislators out there that have shared it around that you can get a copy of it if you want to look at it. So we've looked at it, taken a look. Most of the things that we had heard where Nate came on last week and talked, those are in the bill. I said, you and I have been talking about this for, you know, what, 6 months now since
yes.
they went out of regular session, waiting on the special session to come up. And I always said it would be somewhere between 10-12% is what we expected. And it's falling right in at about 12%.
It's about taxes.
Taxes, yeah, 12% yeah. taxes. You know, one of the things
that, you know, what was aggravating about that is I heard Thomas Dobbs yesterday and they were asking him about the rollout of the program. And he said the one thing he was really concerned with is how they were going to fund the program, because if it went into the general fund, then, you know, if they have to cut somewhere, they may cut the funding to the state health department on this program. And I thought, well, isn't that what 65 did?
Yes.
It self-funded itself, and the legislature is the ones that took away the self-funding.
Yes. Yeah, well, Andy Gibson came out, you know, because he's, you know, ag commissioner, and this bill has him managing the cultivation and processing, which seems about right. I mean, that's an agricultural product. You'd think that the agricultural the Department of Ag would handle that type thing. But he is personally opposed to medical marijuana. And he has come out because he's opposed to, you know, any medical marijuana bill. I believe that he is, at least. He has come out now and said basically 65 was a more free market bill. You know, 65 was taxed at a lower rate. 65 was this and 65 was that. And I was like, hey, it would have been great to have you on our side when 65 was in.
That's right. Well, he just doesn't want the extra work or something?
No, he's just, I think he's morally opposed to medical marijuana. So, I mean, he was not a, you know, he was opposed to hemp, you know, because he said this at a meeting I went to where he was at. He said that there could be a chance that a seed from marijuana could accidentally get mixed in with hemp seeds. And then if a farmer's found to have just one marijuana plant mixed in with his hemp plant, they would come and destroy his entire crop. So he's looking out for the farmer.
Yeah, right, right.
But yeah, I mean, there's, you know, there's quite a few things in this bill that, I'm not a big fan of. Actually, one of the, you know, to me, outside of the taxes part of it, look, it's a medical, you know, product, you know, it's a prescription, or at least a certification for treatment, and I don't think it should be taxed at all. We have no other medications in Mississippi are taxed.
Right.
No other medical products
that
are taxed.
That point is lost on if this whole argument.
If they are prescribed by a doctor, it's not taxed in Mississippi. But all of a sudden, this, because it's got some, you know, long-standing preconceived notion of it being a horrible thing, they want to tax it.
Right.
You know, they think it's a sin, you know, like every other sin tax, like tobacco and alcohol. And it's actually got, it's got two taxes on it. It's got a sales tax, a normal 7% sales tax, but then it's got an excise tax on it. What we normally put an excise tax on is things like alcohol, things like, you know, tobacco.
Right.
Things that we think, you know,
sins.
We being the government, not
right,
me,
right.
You know, think that we should try to prevent people from using, so we tax them at a higher rate. But this is not recreational or adult use marijuana. This is medical marijuana that has to be prescribed.
So you can get opioids in Mississippi without paying any taxes.
Oh, right.
So you, 100%. So as an opioid addict, you save a ton of money in taxes.
That's
if you dared to use a plant to treat your Parkinson's. Do you know how many people are killed each year in this country from properly prescribed, properly taken pharmaceuticals?
Not I'm hoping you have that number.
It's well over 100,000 per year.
Yeah.
100,000 people. You know how many people die from marijuana use in this country a year?
I'm guessing probably goose
zero.
Egg, but yeah.
Zero and zero and zero year after year, but they target this strictly because of the fear mongering.
Yeah. So outside of the tax, though, I mean, the taxes are certainly a big part of this, but outside of that, to me, one of the worst things is they put a restriction on dispensaries. The dispensaries can't be located within 1,500 foot of one another.
Yeah, that stinks.
Well, that's cronyism.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, because if you've got one guy that sets up in a location first, then he's got a market. You're giving him a monopoly on 1,500 feet.
Right. In a circle.
In a circle. That's right. In a radius around him.
Right.
And, so nobody else can put up around him. So
and with the zoning, with the zoning that they now have control over in those kinds of things, any government that, I mean, there are going to be some bribes paid to say, make the zone that we can build in really small. Put me in the middle of it, and pretty much that would be the only dispensary in town.
Yeah, so that's a dispensary. So not only do they have local zoning control, but they also they have to be in a commercial zoned area for it, and they have the 1,500-foot buffer. So they're going, you know, they're using cronyism to very, you know, narrowly define where they can be, and so that they own these markets. But one of the other things is for zoning on cultivating and processing. Those can only be located in something that's zoned either agricultural or industrial. So you can't have a warehouse in a commercial area that's growing and cultivating and processing. It has to be agriculture or industry, which are usually, you know, agriculture is usually out in the county or, you know, the very, if it's in the city limits, it's on the very edge, processing the same way, you know. So you can't be in a commercial area and have a warehouse where you're doing a grow. Has to be in industrial or agricultural, and then dispensaries can only be in commercial areas. So to me, the guys who are looking at doing vertical businesses where they have, you know, you're cultivating in the back, you're processing in the middle, and then you have a storefront, I'm not sure how that's going to work.
just a lot of transport between places.
Yeah.
Increases security risks and everything else.
Which is also by the Department of Ag. They have the authority over the transport of it, too. So.
Well, you know, in that 1,500-feet area, so if you get into one of these, a smaller Mississippi town that doesn't have a big commercial
right.
zone or whatever, if there are five people in that city that have got ideas of entering this industry and they all want to do this, I mean, I suppose people haven't already filed. This thing's not in existence yet, so they
right.
can't get approval for a license yet. So, like, the day that they start accepting applications for licenses, what if those five people in that small town all send their applications in? I mean, who decides who gets the licenses?
Well, who are you best friends with?
Yeah. I mean, that's what it's going to be.
Who's your buddy?
Right.
Who do you know?
Yeah.
How much money do you have?
Yeah, exactly. whose campaign did you contribute to? I mean, I just don't think people understand this. These politicians who say that they love us, they care about us, they want to keep it away from school, blah, blah, blah. These regulations breed corruption and cronyism. I mean, this is what people complain about all the time. But on the front end, there's a lot of people out there going, well, I'm kind of glad they did the zoning things because I don't want 16 pot shops in my neighborhood. Because they have no faith in the free market. That would never last for very long. We've talked about that a lot here. But they just can't abide. People have been so brainwashed, even conservatives. They have so little faith in the free market that they say, well, you know, some sensible regulations. That's the way the politicians always phrase it. Well, we're just looking for some common sense regulations. That's what the left uses for gun control, and the right
yeah.
can spot that a mile away. But when it comes to things like this, conservatives go, well, I do believe Mary Hawkins Butler should have some level of control. I mean, this could really get out of control. Meanwhile, Colorado and Oregon and all of them, those states are doing better than we are. They haven't
yeah.
collapsed into their own footprint because of legalized marijuana. These things will take care of themselves. These regulations breed corruption.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. We, you know, those of us who believe in limited government believe that control over what we do is usually best the smaller a local, you know, the more localized it is. But that's why we have a state government. We have a state government so that the state government can watch over the local people and make sure they're not creating, you know, tyranny
yeah.
among the people. And then we have a federal government that should be looking at the state doing the same thing. So every level of government above the last should only be there to make sure that the one below them is not, you know, creating tyranny among, you know, their people and, you know, destroying people's rights that they have as natural citizens.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's not working real well right now.
Well,
the checks and balances are a little askew.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, you know, we believe in at Americans for Prosperity is bottom-up solutions. You know, so if you haven't heard that term, the more you stay involved with one of our organizations, you'll hear that bottom-up solutions. That's basically saying limited government.
Yeah.
More local government is better. Or outside of government altogether, you know, at the ground level, communities, you know, churches, things like that, to be able to regulate things within their community. And when I say regulate, I mean because of a market regulated, not
right.
because of laws or regulations
right.
or whatever.
Bureaucrats and politicians.
So, I mean, we want bottom-up solutions, but so much comes down from the federal government, including the $16 billion the state of Mississippi gets. You know, so we have a budget, a total state budget, of about $6.5 billion, but we get $16 billion from the federal government. So literally the federal government puts more into our state than the state of Mississippi puts into our state.
That's unbelievable. I mean, and that's in a majority red state. This is why I'm probably the only person on talk radio that, you know, I will bash the bailout of California or the bailout of Illinois or the bailout of anybody else, but I will not be hypocritical and act like somehow we sit in some kind of a moral authority. We're bailed out every single year. All right, well, real quick, and then we got to take a break. So is Tate Reeves going to call a special session for this thing?
It's a good question. I think if we have not heard something, I'm gonna get my crystal ball out and say if we have not heard something by, you know, this time next week, by the time I come on next week, if we haven't heard anything, it won't happen.
Is there not going to be a huge outrage about that? I mean, are people not expecting them to do this? I've heard.
I mean, has there not already been a huge outrage over the last 6 months?
Well,
I don't know if they care.
Well, I mean, I don't think they would have even been contemplating a special session if it hadn't been for people being upset at the way that this thing was derailed by the Supreme Court. So it feels to me, and maybe I'm wrong, but it felt like the people got this moving. Are they going to pull it away from them again?
They kind of make you feel like they're doing something.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Come on, Mike. You know, we've been doing this too long for you to think that they wouldn't be trying to pull something over on you.
I'm just such an optimist.
I think there's legislators out there who truly want this to happen. They truly want this to hurry up and get it done, even if it's not a perfect bill, so that the people who are suffering can get the care that they need.
that's the reason.
I mean, that's the entire reason any of this started. Mississippians for Compassionate Care, who started the ballot initiative process, who without them, even though the ballot initiative got thrown out,
right,
without them, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Sure, absolutely.
Getting something passed. So anybody that worked on that campaign, it's only because of, you know, your work that we got to this point, because we wouldn't be having this conversation without that happening. But there's a lot of them out there still don't want this, and they're going to do everything they can. I think the legislature has asked the governor. I don't know how firmly they asked him, if they did it just to say that we've asked him, and now it's on him.
I did hear this, though. They were saying that the legislature was possibly proposing other things that would go into a special session, three or four other items. I know we've discussed that before, and there doesn't seem to be an urgency on many different things.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. So with a special session, when the governor calls a special session, they can only bring up on the agenda what the governor sets it for.
Right.
So it's not like they can get in there and then, you know, run off into something else.
Well, I guess my question is, are they trying to tack other things on this special session to sabotage it? Because Tate Reeves is not going to let him come back for 3 weeks to hash out five different topics. Is that a deliberate sabotage move?
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly heard from one side of the legislature that they want Medicaid expansion, and they're trying to, you know, plug that into anything, whether it's, you know, medical marijuana, or whether it's income tax elimination. They're going to try to plug Medicaid expansion into whatever they can to try to use that as a bargaining chip. So I wouldn't, you know, completely, you know, go out and say that that's not happening here.
All right. So should people be calling Tate Reeves' office and demanding the special session?
I think so. I think you should be calling your legislature, your legislator too, your senator and representative. And when they say, hey, we've done our part, say, no. You guys need to be the loud voice for us. You're elected to represent us. You need to continue to have the loud voice to tell the governor to do this too.
So that's more impactful to get the legislature behind it than just
If you have the people and the legislature, if everybody's publicly calling on Tate Reeves to do something, then it's going to be very hard for him not to do something. If the legislature's just kind of sitting back and saying, we got the bill together and we've asked you for it, but,
yeah,
you know, kind of if you do it, cool. If not, you know, we'll be there in January. I mean, I'd say most of the legislatures are probably okay not coming back. They spend 4 months up here as it is. They don't want to come back in off session if they can wait till January.
I hate for them to have to go and fix something because they left the ballot initiative so flawed for 20 years. Is there any hesitation? I mean, would Tate Reeves not call a special session because he opposes the bill, because he opposes medical marijuana? Would he do something kind of unilaterally himself, or is he really just waiting?
He certainly could. He's got the power to do that.
But I guess
I don't think Tate Reeves has any hesitancy to medical marijuana, especially seeing the political implications it will have if he just comes out and says, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to call a special session
unless he has
something else to say. Well, look, they're telling me, you know, they want me to call for all these other things too. You know, then he's got something to say, but I don't.
But he's not an active obstructor of a medical marijuana program. Okay. All right. We got to take a break. One more segment. Stephen Utrosco, Americans for Prosperity. Stay with us.
Citizens from all over the world. This is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment here with Stephen Utrosco from Americans for Prosperity. I have a bad habit on this show of teasing something for all of about 2 hours and then never actually getting to the topic. So we're not really going to have time to get into infrastructure bill. You were saying, though, I mean, what they're doing right now, it's probably not going to pass anyway. So the things that I wanted to talk about are more almost just kind of outrage, absurdity headlines of what they're trying to do with this bill.
Yeah, it's $3.5 trillion. I saw somebody post this morning that said, if the U.S. government were to borrow $39 million a day from the time that we signed the Declaration of Independence, that's what it would take to be $3.5 trillion. $39 million a day
And didn't Biden come out and say it's not going to cost anything?
Is that true? Yeah. I mean, well, you know, it's made up money, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's what he's getting at.
Okay, so we've still got time then. Y'all are still fighting it up there in Washington, D.C.
We are.
This will still continue to take form, and it's not going anywhere.
No, I don't think it's going to get anywhere. I mean, even in the House, which are the heart of Democrats to sway, there's even, you know, a handful of those that have come out. You know, you need 5 Democrats on the House to oppose it, to kill it in the House, and then you just need 1 Democrat in the Senate to oppose it, which is, you know, you and I talked off air about Joe Manchin, who is probably one of the most powerful men in Washington.
Seriously,
right now.
Seriously, he really is. He must just really, I bet he just kicks back in that chair, feet on the desk, and just they come in and beg.
Yeah, when I told you, you know, some of the guys said, I actually met with this past week in Washington, D.C. I asked about Joe Manchin. They said, don't be confused. He is not the moderate that he seems. He's not a moderate Democrat. He's a liberal Democrat that just knows how to work the system.
Yeah.
So he is moderate for that.
Well, you know, this is the big problem that I have with Washington, D.C., that 537 guys or gals in Washington, D.C., you know, this one guy is basically, we all in Mississippi have to wonder if we're going to start paying 8 cents more a gallon, mile in our cars. You know, this one guy is sitting up there with that kind of power is abhorrent in a nation of 330 million people.
Yeah, that's right. Well, if you got more than $600 in your bank account, they're going to start watching you. You know, there's lots of bad things in this bill, and it goes way beyond just infrastructure, which, just like the last one that, you know, don't forget that our own Roger Wicker voted for.
Right. Well, and, you know, COVID bills went past COVID. You know, all of these bills are given titles. They have basically nothing to do with that. They soundbite around the title of it, but it's full of all kinds of stuff. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yep, that's right. You know, there's bills up there. There's a bill last week went through the House that got voted on, a spending bill that had red flag laws in it.
Right.
Who are, you know, and Trent Kelly voted for.
Yeah, I saw that.
So it is what it is, I guess.
Well,
you know, we got to have people who are willing to, you know, that's what we do as Americans for Prosperity. You know, we're a grassroots organization. We try to educate people to get them involved and tell them, go out and make a difference. Go out and talk to your legislator. Talk to your congressman. Tell them what they're doing. Watch what they're doing. Keep them accountable.
Yeah, and I think the time for sitting passively by and just waiting for the next political savior is over. That hasn't worked. We've tried it for, what, about 4 or 5 decades now?
Yep.
That's not working. People need to take their government back and start with taking your school districts back, as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, all right, you're with Americans for Prosperity. We got the grassroots leadership training every Tuesdays. If anybody wants to come by, tell everybody where they can find your stuff.
Yep. So that's our foundation that's doing the training. So go on AFP Foundation Mississippi on Facebook, and you can see the events there where you can sign up for the training. But it'd be every Tuesday for the next 4 weeks, basically, at our office. Be glad to have people out. But we do lots of other events, so you can follow us on our Americans for Prosperity.